Proverbs chapter 23, I'm going to read from verse 1 all the way down to verse 26. I know that's quite a bit of verses, but I want you to kind of get the idea of what's being said here. Proverbs chapter 23, I'll begin reading in verse 1. When thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee, and put a knife to thy throat, if thou be a man given to appetite. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Labor not to be rich, cease from thine own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. We put it this way, easy come, easy go, I guess. Well, not easy to come all the time. Hard to come, easy to go. Verse 6, eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. The morsel which thou hast eaten shalt thou vomit up, and lose thy sweet words. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. That's a good verse. Sometimes it's just best to walk away and just don't argue with them. Remove not the old landmark, and enter not into the fields of the fatherless. For their Redeemer is mighty. He shall plead their cause with thee. Apply thy heart unto instruction, and thine ears to the words of knowledge. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with a rod, he shall not die. And we'll come back to these next couple of verses. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, and shalt deliver his soul from hell. My son, if thine heart be wise, my heart shall rejoice, even mine. Yea, my reins shall rejoice when thy lips speak right things. Let not thine heart envy sinners, but be thou in the fear of the Lord all the day long. For surely there is an end, and thine expectation shall not be cut off. Hear thou, my son, and be wise, and guide thine heart in the way. Be not among winebibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh. In other words, stay away from the party animals. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. Hearken unto thy father that beget thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. Buy the truth and sell it not. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. I like that also, verse 23. Buy the truth and sell it not. In other words, do what it takes to get what the truth is, and once you find the truth, hold on to it. Don't sell it. Don't leave it. Don't give it up. The reason I read so many verses to you this evening is I want you to see. Especially this is true in Proverbs, it's true in other places in the Bible. But the Bible deals more with than what we'd say simply biblical doctrine as far as Jesus is God or go out soul winning, the rapture of the church. All those are important. I'm not downplaying any of that. But the Bible is also a practical book. It deals with our day-to-day living. And the Lord is concerned about, if we'd say the big things, that is true, but also the Lord is concerned about how you live your day in and out. And whether we're talking about raising our children, which we're going to talk about, or how you behave at work. Sometimes people, they say, when I go to church, this is one thing, but when I go to work, that's different. It should not be that way. There should be no separation between what we call the sacred and the secular. For the Christian, all things are sacred. Your work should be just as sacred as when you come to church, as far as you do it for the Lord. And you're thinking about Him, and you're doing it for His glory. And so, as we read through the book of Proverbs, other places in the Bible, especially in the book of Proverbs, we see that it deals all kinds of different issues being dealt with. I want you to go back with me to Proverbs 23, because I want you to look at some verses that are, I think, misused or misunderstood or misapplied, and sometimes it gets ourselves in trouble. Proverbs 23, now we're not into the main teaching yet. I just want you to look at verse 13 and 14 with me. It says this, withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with a rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, and shall deliver his soul from hell. That sounds kind of rough, doesn't it? Almost sounds like, and sometimes in our mind we picture someone just wailing away on a kid, and that's not what the idea of the Lord's trying to get across here. So I want you to notice several things, because I think this is misused, and I think you need to make sure we have a biblical understanding about this. Three things I want you to notice. Number one is this, the Bible is not condoning or promoting child abuse. There's nothing in the Bible that promotes someone abusing a child or misusing a child or in some way harming a child. That's not what he's promoting here. Verses need to compare with other verses. So this is not condoning child abuse. And some of the things... Now, I believe in spanking. I'll just tell you up front, I do believe in spanking. But most of the time when people get in trouble for spanking is because they're not spanking. Spanking is not slapping. Spanking is not shaking. Spanking is not throwing. Spanking is not knocking them around. Spanking is not picking up something and hit them. None of that is spanking. That's all abuse. And should not be. So that's not... When we're talking about spanking, we're not talking about abusing a child. Because if you're abusing them, you're not spanking them. Number two, I want you to notice this. The Bible is teaching that it is proper to spank a child. How do we know that? He says in verse 13, withhold not correction. Now, I think that's a broader means, and you don't always have to spank him, but there should be correction. But notice, for if thou beatest him with the rod, and the idea is a switch or some type of board, thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell. So obviously he's talking about corporal correction, spanking. Number three is this. Look at verse 12 again. It says, apply thy heart unto instruction. And then in verse 14 it says, and shalt deliver his soul from hell. So we could understand this, that here's the third thing. The purpose of correction, and in part in spanking, the purpose of correction is to, now listen carefully because I want to spend a couple minutes here. The purpose of correction is to instill instruction. Now listen, not to blow off steam. That's what gets us in trouble. You have no right to be hitting a child when you're upset. It's not a, you're going to get yourself in trouble. Proper spanking, if we're talking about biblically spanking a child, is a predetermined number. When you approach that child and you're going to do biblical spanking, you should know up front how many, I'll just say licks. How many licks that child's going to get? Typically, when my kids were little, they got, usually it was three. Sometimes it was two. A few times it was one. But before I ever got the paddle out, I already knew in my head, this is a three swatter. Okay? You don't just start whacking away. Proper spanking is a predetermined number of swats to a predetermined place. Now, I think the Lord has created us with a purpose, perfect place. The Board of Education has a perfect place to be applied to the seat of learning. Okay? It shouldn't be we just grab something and you just start wailing away at them, and they have bruises from head to toes. That is wrong. Okay, that's not biblical spanking. And people, you know, when they fuss with us about spanking, it's because people are not spanking. They're abusive. Okay? It's a predetermined number of swats to a predetermined place because of a predetermined offense. If your child did something wrong, but you never told them it was wrong, why are you spanking them? Let me ask you this. Would you want to get a ticket for today for the law they're going to pass tomorrow? You'd be like, well, how did I know it was the law? It isn't going to happen until tomorrow. And so it's not fair to all of a sudden spank your child for a rule that you never gave them to begin with. So that is a biblical idea of spanking there, corporal correction. Now, let me just put it this way so we understand. A parent, should never spank a child when they're mad, when they're inconvenienced, or when they're embarrassed. Now, I told you this before. For some reason, it just happened in our family. When our kids were little, they're all sitting around the table. Everyone has their glass of milk in front of them. Someone is going to knock that glass of milk over. Could you pass, click, jump up from the table, grab the towel? Now, that's inconvenience. That's not necessarily... Now, if they grabbed their milk and said, hey, watch, that's a different story. Okay, it's upsetting, it's frustrating. That's really not a spanking offense. They didn't. I know they shouldn't have done it, and they should have been paying attention. But typically, it wasn't the same child. I had five kids. I think they took straws every time. Okay, it's your turn this time. You get the short. Seemed like that at times. There's other things they would do that was irritating, but that's not a spanking offense. Nor because you're embarrassed. Whatever rule you have should be consistent no matter where you're at with your child. If it's a rule at home, it's a rule at Walmart. But a lot of times we do things at Walmart because everyone's around and we're embarrassed how our kid is acting. But when they're home, they get away with it. And that's confusing to a child. And so we're not spanking them because I'm mad at them. I'm not spanking them because I'm inconvenienced. I'm not spanking them because they embarrass me. I've said, here's a rule. You need to keep this rule. And maybe they didn't break it and this happened. They didn't break it and this happened. Finally, it's okay. Well, you know what? We got to get serious about it because you don't think I'm serious. Okay, that is it shouldn't be all emotional. It shouldn't be all chasing through the house. It shouldn't be yelling and screaming. It should be very direct. It can be quiet, and it can be an appropriate way. Now, I point that out because those verses are there, and I don't want you to misunderstand what he's saying there. He's not in any way implying that there's a right to beat a child in a way that's abusive. Now, as we do read the book of Proverbs, you'll find a lot of teaching that deals with what I just simply look at as practical daily living. The idea is this: the Bible simply, it does prepare us for heaven. It tells us about Christ. When you be saved, we can earn rewards and lay up our treasures in heaven. So the Bible prepares us for heaven, but it does more than that. The Bible not only prepares us for heaven, but it makes us, now listen, it makes us better fit to live in this world. I'm not saying we're going to be doing the things of the world, but we as born-again people, if we would really look at the Bible and approach the Bible and live the Bible, we better, when I say fit, I don't mean we fit into the world, but I mean we know how to deal with the world. We know how to deal, we live a life that's better than the unsaved because we know some things what the Lord has taught us. And so part of child training, when we think about important ingredients in child training, part of child training is preparing them. Now, this statement here kind of gets us in, we're getting ready to write some things down. Part of child training is preparing them being our children, to live and conduct themselves appropriately. So when our kids get out of our house, they should know something about how to live. Okay, they should know how to live. Okay, I don't want to say too much. I get ahead of myself. I have some notes I want to give you. So three things I want to share with you about this idea. This is a little different. Last week it was Bible, and it was talking about the Lord's goodness. Today we're shifting and talking more about some more practical things I think should be involved in child training as we look at the Word of God. Three things I want to share with you. Number one is this. Teach children the value of work. It's important when a child is growing up to learn the value of work. Look with me. We're going to look at several verses about this. Proverbs 13. Proverbs 13. Look with me at verse 11. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. Now we're talking on Sunday mornings in Sunday school about Ecclesiastes, the vanity of money and the vanity of those things, all those things without the Lord. And that is true. And here again he talks about it there in verse number 11. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished. But don't forget, the Lord does bless good old-fashioned hard work. Now, I think the reason we do it should be different. We're not just trying to gain, but there should be this idea that we do work hard. We are trying to do something in our lives. We have some goals. We have some desire to accomplish some things. He says that in verse 11 there. He that gathereth by labor shall increase. Go with me to Proverbs 14. Look with me in verse 23. In all labor there is what? Profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury. You ever have a job where you have one guy working, one guy talking? I've had jobs that way. It's like, man, if you would work as much as you talk, this job would be over in no time. And that is true. Some people, all they want to talk and goof around. But the Bible says if you put some oomph to it, put your back into it, learn how to work, you can get some things done in life. And typically speaking, the person who works moves ahead. It may not always seem that way right off, and sometimes people know how to have the silver tongue and work their way up, but overall, in the long haul of things, usually those who know how to work are going to move ahead. Because pretty soon they're going to realize this guy, all he is talk. He doesn't know anything, and he's not good for anything. Proverbs 21. Proverbs 21. Look with me at verse 25. Here's a good verse. It says, "The desire of the slothful," that would be the opposite of the one who's laboring, slothful, lazy, sluggard, slackered, all those kind of have same similar meaning. "The desire of the slothful killeth him." Now why is that? "For his hands refuse to labor." And you go back with me to Proverbs 23. We just saw this in verse 4 and verse 5. It says, "Labor not to be rich, cease from thine own wisdom. Well, thy set thine eyes upon that which is not for riches, certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven." And so the idea is should labor, don't labor to be rich, don't just labor for the things of the world, but have some work ethic, put some sweat into some things. And I think as when children are young, it's important to teach them that. In other words, God wants us, and this is what we ought to teach them, God wants us to be industrious people. Not necessarily greedy people, but industrious people. We ought to teach young people that there is a value to work. Now, listen here. If by hard work you advance, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being advancing and being in charge of things and making some good money. So I think if we're not careful, sometimes we get made people think that there's some value of living in poverty and never having any money and just wallowing in that. Now, if by living for the Lord, and that's your situation in life, you ought to just thank the Lord for what He has provided you, and not everyone is going to be rich. But if you're working and that's it, then so be it. But if you're living in poverty because you're lazy, don't blame God for that. You know, if you say, "Well, preacher, I can't pay my utilities, I can't pay my rent, I can't do anything." But you turned around and you spent all this money at McDonald's and you went to Walmart and just bought a bunch of junk and everything. It's not that God didn't provide for you. It's you wasted God's provision. And so we ought to say, you know, I need to have some effort. I need to have some integrity. I have some character. And I need to put some sweat and put some emphasis here and learn to be a hard worker. I think every child would be blessed if parents said, "I want my children to know the value of hard work. I want my boys to know what it is to get splinters and blisters. I want my kids to know what it is to sweat. You know, it's not always going to be fun and games. It's not always fun to do what's right, but you just say, you know, you got to put some oomph to it." Now, I think this, a child is taught to respect the value of work will have an edge in this life. I don't know all the different places you work, but I would say this. Most likely, wherever you work, the people who are working the hardest... Now, I don't know all that Terrence does. I know he puts a lot of hours in. Works hard. Same thing is true probably for most of you, not all of you. And there's probably some people there who are sluggards and slackers, who just do enough to get by. And it's irritating to you probably because you're like, "Man, you know, I feel like I'm carrying some of your load." But if you would teach your child from the very young age to be a hard worker, to be industrious, I believe most of them will do well in life. Even if we want every one of our children to live for the Lord, do we not? Let me tell you this, but I also want my kids to be self-supporting. I don't want my kids to have to live off of the state. I don't want my kids to say, "Well, you know, I don't know how I'm going to eat. I don't know how I'm going to take care." I want my kids to know what it is to go out and get a job, put some oomph to it, and make a way in this world. That should be our desire for our kids. Yes, to live for the Lord. I'm not in any way downplaying that. We talked about that last week. But it's also important to teach them to be good, hard workers in this world. Now, I want you to notice, go back with me to Proverbs 15. I want you to notice what the Bible talks about when it talks about slothfulness or laziness. Proverbs 15, verse 19. He says, The way of the slothful man is an hedge of thorns. In other words, it's a hard way to live. That's the idea. Then go to Proverbs 19 and verse 15. That was 15:19. Now look at 19:15. Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. Then go with me to Proverbs 26. Look at verse 13. Notice what it says here. The slothful man saith, there's a lion away. A lion is in the streets. You know what that means? He's making excuses. He comes up with these weird ideas or these weird off-the-wall excuses why he can't go get ahead. What all these problems. If you've had, in 10 months, you've had 10 different jobs because you got fired every time, I'm going to tell you, it's probably not the boss hates you. It's probably something about you. Because if I know this, as a manager, if I had a hard worker, when I had a hard worker, I'd bend over backwards to help that guy out or that girl out. But when I had someone who wasn't going to work, I ain't bending at all. I'm bending this way to kick them out the door. I'm not helping them at all. I'm cutting their hours. I'm trying to... Now, I was kind of the hatchet man at Long John Silver's. Thank you. So I was the guy who said, walk the plank, matey. So I was the hatchet man. Okay, that was as a manager, it was part of my job. And so, but I never fired anyone. Not one person ever fired. But I probably had like a dozen different people who quit. I had one guy, this is weird. He was a senior in high school. And I was only 19 myself, maybe 20 at the most. He was probably 18. He was so stressed out because he wouldn't do his job. He was lazy. So anyways, when he went to quit, he actually brought in his brother, who was like 25, who stood behind him while he told me he was quitting. He was so scared that something was going to happen when he quit. I was like, okay, Mark. Okay, well, here's your uniforms. Thank you. Have a good day. But anyways, let's back to this. So notice the lion's in the street. Let's go back to this. There's a lion in the way, a lion in the street. Look at verse 14. As the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth a slothful man upon his bed. Just back and forth, lazy. The slothful hideth his hand in his bosom. It grieveth him to bring it again to his mouth. Just he's too lazy to make his way. The sluggard, now notice this, the sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render reason. No matter what you say about, well, and you say, well, how if you do that? Oh, that won't work. No. Well, what? Try this. No, that won't. And he has a reason why nothing's ever going to work, and his life is, he's always sponging off of people, and he always has a reason why he has to do that. And that's the idea. That's how the Bible condemns that type of living. And so we need to teach our kids, when they're young, to learn to be hard workers. Put some value to it. Don't downplay it. Don't make it a negative. It should be that this is a good thing to learn how to work hard. Let me say, well, preacher, what do you mean by that? So I'm glad you asked. I'm going to give you a couple of thoughts. Give your children chores to do and make sure they do them. Chores. Work. So what? They won't want to do them. Mine didn't either. And by the way, I didn't either when I was a kid. One of the things I'm thankful, and I've told my mom this, one of the greatest things my mom ever did is taught me to work. My mom's soon to be 80. And she's in relatively good health. She has some arthritis problems and things. She's in relatively good health. And her big complaint is she can't get out and work in the yard anymore. When I was there, she took me around the yard and told me all the things, all the projects she had going on. But, you know, she's not able to do it physically. But my mom, growing up, my mom was always a worker. I mean, I'd be up Saturday morning. I mean, I've been to school all... I've labored in school, public school, all Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, finally a day off. And so I get up, and I got my Cap'n Crunch or whatever, and there's Bugs Bunny on TV. I mean, life is at its peak for me. I mean, it's great right now. And my mom would come in and say, Hey, Denny, get your shoes on. We got something going on out here. We're either building something, tearing something down, moving something. And I'm like, oh, Mom. No, sorry. I thought, oh, Mom. I said, yes, ma'am. That's what I said. I knew better than say anything other than yes, ma'am. So I said, okay. So I got my, and we'd go out there and we built things and tore down things. Sometimes tore down things, built something, tore that down, then built something else. My mom always had projects going on, and I hated it. I hated it. We spent one whole summer. We moved our trailer into Maidsville, and when we moved that, there was an old house there, and it had no indoor plumbing. It had an outhouse. That was my stepfather's mom lived there. And I remember when the outhouse, because sometimes we'd go there and visit, and I remember the outhouse filled up, and they tore down that outhouse. Well, actually, they didn't tear it down. They just set it on fire, burned the whole thing down, and they thought it was great. And so then they went over here and just dug another hole and built another outhouse. And they said, "There you go, Mom." That's what they said. "There you go, Mom. New bathroom." Like, anyone ever thought about putting one in the house? That might be a little, she might appreciate that more. But I mean, we bought that land finally. That house was just, it was falling apart. So we, and guess what? Now, no, know what we did to the house? Set it on fire. That's right. Burned it down too. Yeah, this is great. And so they burned it down, collapsed it, and here is the road, and the yard was probably about like this. And you know how when it rains, we get all this water out front? Their whole yard would flood. Her whole yard, because everything was lower. And so there's a creek on that side, and there's this land, and all the water would flood. And so my mom and stepfather said, all we need to do is raise the yard. Makes sense, right? So they went and got a whole bunch of dump trucks, dumped all these piles of dirt. All the house is gone. It's an empty lot. Got, you know, big piles of dirt. Looks kind of good. Now it needs leveled out. And so they went and got a couple wheelbarrows, got a couple shovels, brought my brother and me along and said, okay, here we go. And we raised that whole yard up. One whole summer, we raised the yard up. And then we put two trailers on it, one this way, one this way, like an L, and the, do not tell EPA what I'm about to tell you, okay? We have to cut this part out of the tape. But across the road was the creek, and on this side of the road was the storm drain that emptied into the creek. And they said, we don't need a septic tank. All we got to do is get to that get to that drain. That's all we got to run the sewer to the drain. It'll make it to the creek. And that's what we did. And so we had to dig a sewer line from this trailer all the way out, and it was probably, I guess the road was probably, if that was a trailer, the road was probably at the other side, outside, probably to the far side of that parking lot over there. So we dug this ditch like this by hand with shovel, mattock and shovel, dug it that way, dug one from this way, dug a water line, dug a gas line, let it all cover it back up. I spent a whole summer doing that. Hated it. Absolutely hated it. But you know what I did? I learned to work. I had blisters on my hands, and man, I hated every bit of it. But I look back, and it was a valuable time in teaching me the value of work. And I thank God for it now. Didn't then. So give your children chores to do and make sure they do them. You don't necessarily have to make them do all that, but give them chores to do and make sure they do them. Second thing is this. Now, none of this, let me just stop and say, none of this is thus saith the Lord. I'm trying to give you some ideas here. Okay, these are ideas to help you. You got to kind of work them into your family. Here's one. Don't give them allowances without crying work for it. Don't teach them that money just comes. Let me ask you, does your boss just hand you out gobs of money? Do you walk in, your boss says, hey, here's some money. No, he doesn't. Usually when it's payday, you got to kind of pull it sometimes out of his hand. So don't give them allowances without requiring work for something. You say, well, they can't do a whole lot. Well, make the allowance based on what they can do. Now, I'm going to tell you something here to the hurt and chagrin of my kids. We never gave them allowance. Well, we did. It was called breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and a bed to sleep in. Okay? Here's your allowance. I'm taking your money, and we're going to pay a utility bill. That's what we're going to do. We didn't have money to give allowance. We just didn't have it. But there was still work to be done, and they still did that. And I thank them for their generosity and good attitude through it all. Yeah. Here's another thought. Encourage them to work odd jobs when young. When young, I'm not talking about 5 or 4. Could be, I guess. But I mean, they're not adults yet. Now, obviously, you got to use some sense. I mean, you don't take a 5-year-old and give him a chainsaw and say, hey, go be a lumberjack. Okay? You use some sense in these things. And you don't put your kids in places where you can't protect them or they're in places you don't know what's going on. You got to use some wisdom, obviously. But if there's an odd job they can do, maybe a family or they got some work, they can work for a family member or something. Encourage them to do that. Teach them the value of work. Okay, and then here's another thought about this. Teach them to be thankful for a job and to do their best at it. Let me tell you, if you have a job, especially now really in this economy, but if you have a job ever, you ought to be thankful for it, and you ought to try to do your best. You know, it doesn't have to, the job you have today may not be the job you always have. I've worked at Long John's, I've worked at FedEx, I've worked at a couple other places. Me and Larry put in, me and Tommy put in the fence. Me, Tommy, and Larry worked at a construction site down here in Westlake, and I've worked a couple of different kinds. I've washed windows. I've done several different things. None of them was the end, but when I had that job, I was thankful for it, and I wanted to do my best. Under the circumstances, the best I could, I wanted to do my best. Let me show you some verses about this. Go with me to Ecclesiastes. Hold your place in Proverbs. We'll come right back to it. Ecclesiastes. Look at chapter 9. Look at verse 10. It says, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might. For there's no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. But whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might. If you have a job to do, you ought to do it your best. It may not be the best ever. Maybe someone can do it better than you, but that'll be the best you can do. You ought to teach your child. If you've given them a job to do, it may not be up to your standard. Maybe you can do the job better than them, but you're not a kid, you're an adult. But is it the best your child can do? If it's not, say, you know what, I think you can do better than that. And just say, well, you can help them, you can encourage them, but ultimately you want to teach them to do their best at what they're doing. If you're going to do something, do it your best. Put some value into the work and be thankful for that job and do it for the glory of God. So teach your children the value of work. I think, if you'll just let me say this, I think this is one of the things that's hurting our current society. I'm not trying to paint with a super wide brush. I'm not trying to be ugly and unkind. But we are raising a generation of slackers. A bunch of, I'm going to say it and it's going to be offensive, but we're raising a bunch of sissy boys. Man, they just, I was somewhere. There was a bunch of guys, teenage boys, and I thought, Brother Shuler, I thought, if we go to World War III, and this is the generation, we're in trouble. Can you tell you why we won World War II? Because we took a bunch of guys off the farm, and they said, let me at them. And they went over there, and they just kicked the tail of all the Nazis and the Japs. And they were tough cookies. And there's something to be taught to young people about. I'm not talking about macho. I'm not talking about arrogance. I'm talking about the idea that you can put a good day's work in. And be proud of what you're doing. Be thankful for that job. Do your best at it. All right, let me tell you number two. That's number one, I think. That's a good ingredient in child training. Teach the children the value of work. Number two is this. Insist on proper manners. This is kind of flip side of this. Yes, they need to be hard workers, but they need to have a little bit of culture, a little bit of refinement. Know how to behave themselves when they're out and about, when they're around other people. Let me show you a verse about this. Hold your place again. I think we're going to be back in the book of Proverbs. Yep, we are. So hold your place in Proverbs. Go with me to the book of Luke. Book of Luke. Did you ever notice that when your kids were born, talking about a few months old or whatever, and they were hungry? Remember when they used to just lay there and wait for you to come feed them? Remember they used to knock on the door and say, Mom, I'm hungry. Can I eat now? Remember those days? What did they do? Rah! 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 Why? It was all about them. Well, I understand that when they're a few months old. But somewhere along the line, as they get older, they should be taught that's not how you behave. Okay? You don't stomp your feet just because you don't get your way. You be taught some manners about these things. Luke chapter 6, look with me at verse 31. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. You know what is that called? The golden rule. Can I tell you that's the whole basis of having manners? You treat people the way you want to be treated. That's really what manners is. I'm being thoughtful about the other person. We need to teach our young people, teach our children this. So basically, manners are the outliving of the golden rule, treating people as you'd want to be treated. And good manners often enable you to get along with other people. Sometimes we get fusses with people. You know, we say, well, you know, this people don't like me because I love Jesus. Could you ever, maybe people don't like you because they don't like you? You ever think about that? Maybe it's you they don't like. They love Jesus. It's you personally they have issues with. Brother House, you say it this way. I don't mind if people get upset with my position, but they shouldn't be upset because of my disposition. In other words, if I live for the Lord and I'm living holy, I'm trying to go out soul winning, and that makes them mad, there's nothing I can do about that. But they shouldn't get mad at me because I'm just offensive in my behavior towards them. That's not why they should be mad. They should be mad because I'm knocking them around or pushing them out of the way and being unkind, being unthoughtful. That's not why I want them mad at me. So what do you want to say about this? Because we got to go a little bit quick here. So let me give you three thoughts here. One is this, teach proper manners at the table. Teach them how to behave at the table. Ask, don't reach. Chew with your mouth closed, that's a good one. Say please and thank you. Now, it's better to learn these things at home than let your kids be embarrassed in public. I don't mean embarrass you, I mean embarrass themselves in public. So teach them at home. You don't necessarily have to have fine china and real elegant type of stuff. We're not talking about that. Just teach them some basic good manners about how to live. It's good for our kids to learn. How about this? Teach proper manners when in public. I think it's always good when you see young men open doors and hold doors open for ladies. So that's always good. We want to teach our boys to do that. Appreciate those who do. We have some good boys, and I appreciate those who do. Okay? How about this? And this is probably a problem we're having right now. Being loud and obnoxious in public. Typically, on cell phones. Could you imagine what's going to happen? I know they're pushing for it, and I hope it never happens. But if it does happen and you can talk on your cell phone in an airplane and you're on that plane, you know, there's only two reasons they don't let you talk on the cell phone. One is most of the time you can't get connection because you're way up there and the tower's way down there. So you don't even really have good connection. Number two is, it has nothing to do, I know they say the instruments, and nothing is going to affect that. You know why they don't? Because they know what happens. You put people in this tube and get everyone talking. Hey, Mom, how you doing? Oh, I can't believe you told me that. Oh, wait till I, blah, blah. And you're sitting there. What are you going to do? You're going to go nuts. You'll be throwing people out the window. Okay? Now, we just need to be thoughtful. That's really what it is. Just be thoughtful about the people around you, and especially in public. Okay? Don't be loud and obnoxious. Other people are around you. You don't have to walk on eggshells. Just be thoughtful. How about this? Teach proper manners in treating adults. Probably the two things my mom did most to help me. Number one, taught me the value of work. Number two, taught me the importance of treating adults in a particular way. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Yes, sir. No, sir. Please and thank you. If my mom hadn't taught me, I wouldn't have known. But I'm thankful my mom taught me. You got to know my mom. And I say this with all love and respect, but my mom is, she's 50% howdy doody. She's just a wonderful person. She's 50% Adolf Hitler. Don't cross her. My mom would say, man, what can I get for you? Can I get something for you? No, Mom, I'm all right. Okay. And she's the same one who goes, bap, with the back of the hand. Don't you talk like that. That's not how you talk. Okay, Mom. I won't say that again, Mom. Teach proper manners in treating adults. It's good manners. I think that's important as we raise our kids. And they don't have to be perfect. None of our kids are going to be perfect. All of our kids are going to embarrass us, and we're going to embarrass them at times. It's really kind of fun to embarrass your kids, though, isn't it? That's good. And we all do knothead things. It's just, my wife and I were going to a thrift store the other day, and I think it was a thrift store. And so I go to open the door for her, and the door won't open. I mean, it's like, oh, I'm like, what is wrong with this door? Oh, man, no, no. And then by this time, I look at the sign. It said, use the other door. Oh. Now, we all do stupid things. That's just us, okay? We're all going to do stupid. And we're not looking for kids to be perfect. And they're going to say something to embarrass you. But we're just trying to teach them in a general way. Here's how you behave, and trying to help them to do that, remind them of these things. We're not trying to make our kids perfect little angels. We're just trying to help them to learn some manners and about behavior, about treating people right and well. I'll give you the third thing. So number one, we talk and teach the value of work. Number two, insist on proper manners. And then number three is this. Learn to enjoy time together as a family. This, is, I think, is an important ingredient in a family. Go with me to Proverbs 15, if you will. Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15. Look with me at verse 13. A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart the spirit is broken. That's what you want to avoid. You want to avoid breaking your child's spirit. You want to correct them. You want to instruct them. You may even have to spank them, but you don't want to break their spirit. And sometimes we do that, and that's never a good thing. The heart of him that hath understanding seeketh knowledge, but the mouth of fools feedeth on foolishness. All the days that are afflicted are evil, but he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. And he knows how that is both in verse 13 and verse 15, about this idea of a merry heart. So let me just talk to you a few minutes about this idea of learning to enjoy time together as a family. We've kind of gotten away from that. You notice? You know, we're all guilty of it. It was me, my wife, and it might have been Heather. It was someone else. One of my kids, I think it was. And we were somewhere together. I think at a restaurant getting ready to eat. As you can tell, this was a very important thing because I can't remember all the details. But I think we were at the restaurant. We had ordered. We had talked. But it came to a time where one pulled out their cell phone, the other pulled out their cell phone, then the other pulled out their cell phone. And I stopped and realized we're all together, but we're not together, are we? Now, we all have issues, things like that. And I'm not saying you can't ever do that. I'm just saying, but we got to stop and realize as we raise our kids, you know how you spell love, don't you? You know how you spell love? Ready? Here's how you spell love. T-I-M-E. Okay. Well, of course I love them, but you got to spend time with them. And you got to spend some fun time with them. Okay? Now, here's what it means. A parent does not have to make every night a fun-filled activity. If you work hard and you earn your way, you're not going to want to come home every night and have a fun-filled activity. You want to come home, eat, and go to bed. Okay, and I'm not trying to put an extra burden on you. I'm not trying to make your life impossible. So I'm not saying every night has to be, you know, activity night, because that's just not reality. But there should be times when just the family is together doing fun things. There's got to be some time. It doesn't be every night. It'd be nice to be at least once a week. But there should be at least some time, you know, within close proximity of time, that you're doing something together. Let me give you a couple of just thoughts about this to maybe provoke your own thinking. Now, none of this is the end all. I'm just trying to provoke you to think. Maybe you can come with your own ideas, some things for your own family. Okay, how about this? Make meal times a family time. We've kind of gotten away from that, haven't we? You know, I think mealtime is an important time for the family to get together. Now, you may not make maybe not every meal because of schedules, but somewhere along the line, there should be one meal when everyone's sitting down and there's interaction. At least stare at each other. At least make fun of each other. Laugh at it. Do something. You know, but spend some time together. Now, I'm not saying you can't ever sit there and eat in front of a TV. But too many times, that's all we do. We turn the TV on, everyone gets their food, and we sit around there and we watch something together. But we never spend time together. I'm not saying you can't ever do that, but there's got to be some time when we've got FaceTime, face-to-face, and we're around a table and we're interacting with each other. We got to enter into each other's lives and know something about each other. Now, how about this? Second thought. Make regular activities into a family activity. Sometimes we think, okay, if this activity and it's this, we make this huge, drawn-out thing. Just sometimes you just take a regular activity and make it into a family or fun activity. When my children are little, I just give you some ideas. You can do whatever works for you. A lot of times we spent, I'm not complaining, I'm not in any way saying anything negative about the Lord. I'm just telling you the reality of my life when my kids were little, money was not in abundance. You know, it'd been nice of you. You know, I make more money now than I make probably 2.5 times now what I made when my kids were little. Okay, it'd been nice to make this money now. This church takes good care of me. I appreciate that. I've been in other churches and not so much. I'm not complaining about it. I agreed for that amount. I have no complaints. I'm just saying that's not always been the case. So our activity wasn't go to Cedar Point. We could, if we saved all year and one person got to go, that was it. We could afford one ticket for one person. And that wouldn't be no fun for the rest of the family. I would have fun, the rest of the family, not so much. So we spent most of our time, when my kids were little, at the library. We'd always sometimes stop and get ice cream. Now, I like the fact that McDonald's has it, especially during the summer, 50-cent cones. Cha-ching. So, hey, let's go to the library. We'll get an ice cream cone on the way home. And he said, well, that gets old. And it did sometimes. But we're trying to take a regular activity and make it into a family activity. It wasn't that expensive. We had to go to the library anyways. And the ice cream seldom was not that expensive. Okay? And then the third thought is this. Plan special activities together with just your family. It's not wrong to bring other people at times, but sometimes it just needs just be your family. So you have some interaction with them. You can't always afford, and we've never been able to afford a trip to Walt Disney World. It's never been in our budget. And Cedar Point, up until just a couple years ago, we couldn't afford to go to Cedar Point. Again, not complaints, that's just where that was us. So you have to find other things to do. You can sit at home and say, well, kids, we can't go to Cedar Point, so let's just sit here and stare at each other. Or you can say, well, what can we do? Probably the second most thing we did outside of going to the library is we probably walked every nature trail in Lorain Metro Parks and probably almost everyone in Cuyahoga County Metro Parks. We've walked almost every one of those trails with our kids. Our kids don't remember that much because they were a little bit younger. We've walked Rocky River Reservation. I don't know how many times we walked that one. We've walked Carlisle and French Creek. Depending on where we live, whichever one was closer at the time, we've lived closer to different ones at different times. We've walked and you always look for the free day at the zoo, the free day at the museum. Those are always things you look for. And tickets discount tickets at things. But we try to find at least something, some special activity that we could do with them. Can't always do all the things you want to do, but you try to find something. And you make it big. You don't complain about it. You say, let's go walk on the trails. Man, that's going to be fun. And so we go there and fight the mosquitoes and whatever it takes. But, we just make a big deal about it and have fun. One thing is this. Let me just give you a thought here. If your kids are convinced you think it's fun, a lot of times they'll think it's fun. But if you go in there with the idea, they're going to think, okay? So you want to convince them. And it can be, well, listen, I'm with my wife. Or it could be with your husband. I'm with my kids. We're time together and make something special about it. Okay, let me finish up a couple thoughts. We'll be done. Ready? Every parent has an obligation to provide the best training possible for their children. That's our obligation as a parent. I can't do what you can do. You can't do what I can do. But I can do what I can do, and you can do what you can do. And we need to do our best. I have my kids. You have your kids. I'm not your kid's parents. You're not my kid's parent. I have my kids. You have yours. I need to do my best. You need to do your best. Every child has an obligation to use that training to live a life that is pleasing to God. As a child, that's your obligation. You're being taught these things to use it for the Lord, not to use it for the world, not to use it for yourself, to use it for the Lord. That's why you're being taught these things. Now, no child is forced to stay within the teaching of his parent. God does not force you. You don't put you in the headlock, you ain't going to make it. Now, why is that? This is just a repeat. We said it last week. That allows the child to rise above a poor upbringing. You can sit there and, well, preacher, when I grew up, my parents didn't do any of these things. Okay, but the grace of God is sufficient. You're not bound to stay within some type of circumstance you were raised in. But it also allows, and here's the flip side, and this is the negative side, that also allows a child to sink below a good upbringing. Just because your parents taught you it doesn't mean you're going to turn out if you don't put some oomph to it and put some effort to it. Let me tell you the strangest thing I know. There's in my family, not my wife and kids, but my mom and my brother and sisters. There are six of us. We get together and we talk about our upbringing. We have totally different perspectives. I have one of my siblings. We grew up close together, pretty close in age. And we talk about the same thing. And I say, boy, that was good. And my sibling says, oh, that was terrible. That was... How could we both experience the same thing and have totally different reaction? Let me tell you why it is. Because of the choices we made. And so I think that's important. Let's pray and we'll go into our business meeting.